for Children, Youth, and Families for the Missouri Department of Mental Health. Ellen Kagan is not able to be here today. She'll be here tomorrow, unfortunately missing this. She's with the Georgetown Children's Mental Health Technical Assistance Center and has been very crucial in the Missouri's movement in looking at the public health model and application to children's mental health. And we also have Chris Folter. It takes two of us to explain this because he has the technical side, and I don't do that very well. So one of the reasons that we were looking at a new approach to children's mental health is that we know that there is a nearly 7.4 million or 11% of the children in the United States are reported by their parents to have been diagnosed with an emotional, behavioral, or developmental condition. These were second only to asthma. Mental disorders are second only to asthma as the top health problems in the children with special health care needs. And if you were at the presentation this morning that talked about health care reform and its application for mental health, we also know that that it's 30% in adults of those who qualify for disability, 30% are related to some type of behavioral health disorder. So there's a growing trend, and it's growing more and more. And for those of you in your own state may know that there is never adequate funding for public mental health. We're in Missouri, we can only serve anywhere between 20 to 50% of the children that would qualify for our services, and we have specific eligibility criteria to be able to meet the most severe. So it's a very underfunded system, and as in most states, it's not an entitlement, so it's always at risk for continued cuts, which is what we're facing right now in our states. So we felt it was crucial to come up with a different approach, because if we kept going in this pattern, it would soon overwhelm us and we would not have the money. We would be getting down to serving only 10% perhaps of the population that needs services. As I mentioned, the majority of the public mental health dollars are directed towards selected and specifically indicated interventions and are not adequate to meet the future, current and future needs. So we had to have a paradigm shift to be able to come up with a model that would help us in the future address the needs of this population. So we have created the Show Me Bright Futures. Missouri is the Show Me state, so we Show Me Bright Futures. And the specific mission of this is to create sustainable community infrastructures to support a public health model that addresses the social, emotional, and physical well-being of children and families. This is a significant paradigm shift, and just to kind of tell you my own story, probably 8 years ago, I was sitting on my couch, and for some reason, I have no idea why, I was reading our Department of Health and Senior Services, which is our state public health agency's strategic plan. I had never partnered with them before in the children's mental health system, and I was reading their strategic plan and going, oh my gosh, they're focusing on a lot of the same issues that we are, but I had never partnered with them. About 2 years later, an opportunity arose because school nurses were concerned that though they could deal with the asthma, they could deal with many of the physical health issues that they were facing in the schools with the kids, they felt very unprepared to deal with the mental health issues. So we kind of created this grassroots initiative, training initiative, to deal with, to help the nurses learn more about mental health. We created such strong partnerships in the community that this developed further and further into what we now have, the Show Me Bright Futures initiative. This is a very hard shift for the public mental health system to make. There is more of a focus on epidemiology. We have never really focused on that. We tend to focus on utilization data, maybe some prevalence data, but not really the epidemiology. See, I even still have to learn how to pronounce the word. So that we have to do a shift on the kind of data that we're looking at, because all we can do is say who's accessing services. If we're lucky, we're getting to the outcomes of those services, but we're really not looking at the need or what we can do to prevent and promote mental health. So when we focus, we tend to focus more on the medical model, which is very individually based, as opposed to population based. So again, this is a significant shift for the public mental health systems to be able to make that change. And it can really help us, I feel, most significantly in the long-term system planning, because that's what we need to be looking at. How can we prevent this growing tide of needs in children for their mental health development? So it's been a real challenge getting folks to understand the public health model in its application to children's mental health. Oftentimes, people will immediately go to one of three areas. They say, well, it's all about prevention. So if we just start providing all these evidence-based prevention programs, then we're doing the public health model. Or they'll talk about the integration of mental health and physical health, and they think that's the public health model. Or they talk about that early childhood mental health is really the public health model. So we've had to say to them, no, that it's not really a program. It's not a series of programs. It's a process and approach to get to the issues that can lead to stemming this tide in the growth in mental health issues in children and adolescents. I'm actually also the co-chair for the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors Children's Division on the public health model and its application to children's mental health. So we are trying to deal and train children's directors in state health department or mental health departments about this model. So how many of you are in your state or local community public health agency? And how many of you have a solid partnering relationship with either your community mental health or your state mental health department? Good. Because when I ask my counterparts in my state, most of them do not have conversations with their state counterparts in public health. And so we're really trying to encourage them to start these dialogues. So Chris is going to tell you a little bit. We're working with three communities in Missouri that we weren't able to get the Department of Mental Health to fund this because that would mean we'd have to take services away from treatment and that creates a political backlash for us. But we did get funding through the Missouri Health Foundation and through our transformation grant to be able to support this. And one of the key pieces of this is teaching the communities how to look at their community's data and how to use that data to prevent them from just picking a prevention program or putting in an early childhood program that may not meet the needs of their community. So Chris is going to talk a little bit about what we're doing there.
Thank you, Patsy. My name is Chris Fulcher. I serve as a co-director of a center at the University of Missouri called CARES, or Center for Applied Research in Environmental Systems. And what I'll talk about today is really a technology platform of how we can effectively engage communities at that population level, the crosswalk that Patsy was speaking about. What is CIM, or Community Issues Management? It's basically it's a collaborative management system that helps us at that local level think smarter about how we're dealing with, whether it's youth violence or childhood obesity or access to services. Our platform is a national network that we have in place with communities around the country, Boston, Baltimore, Memphis, Chattanooga, Charleston, South Carolina, Tucson, et cetera. So it's an operational platform, and what we're applying it to is the children's mental health setting in those three communities in Missouri. So why a collaborative tool? We're dealing with complex issues, complex data, limited resources, and how do we leverage on, this is interesting because, I know people want me to hurry up most of the time, but it's just doing it for me. But what we have is a foundation that we can leverage and integrate data in a very robust way. So we have a national web portal, and we have local web portals. And in these local web portals, we have something called issue notebooks. And I'm going to pause it right there. With issue notebooks, it's the way to tell the story around people in place at that local or community level. So what is an issue notebook? Bringing up an example, and by the way, before we go on here, in the very short period of time that we have, 17 minutes, I'm not going in live and I'm not doing a live demonstration of the wealth of data that we have and how you can frame issue notebooks with respect to what we're doing here in Missouri or there in Missouri. But be happy to have a go-to meeting or a go-to webinar to really show you the functionality around what we have. So an issue notebook is made up of these components or tabs. Using the example of food security, you have an overview tab, which really helps the local collaborative pull together who's involved in this issue, contact information, resources brought to bear framing that issue. Next is mapping. We have a national internet-based geographic information system that's publicly available for all communities around the United States. And we have a wealth. We have hundreds of national source GIS layers that are available. Everything from education data, health data, early childhood development data, the census data. We go down to the block group level nationwide with census data, age, race, income, employment, et cetera. The health data, whether we have the county health rankings or we're working with the providers of service data, locations of hospitals, or medically underserved area data, physician shortage area data, et cetera, we have a wealth of data that you can pull together to create issue notebooks. So how many people have heard that expression, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink? Likewise, data, data everywhere, but not a bite to think. It's a geeky, techie bite to think. And that's what we're dealing with, is we're drowning in data, especially at the population level. How do we pull together the data and really inform the question that we need to be focusing on? What is the question? And bringing to bear only those maps, reports, and data elements that inform the story around children's mental health in those three communities in rural Missouri. The next area is reports. The ability to pull together data and compare across regions, whether they're legislative districts, congressional districts, zip codes, counties, et cetera, and look at the underlying characteristics, socioeconomic, demographic, health characteristics, et cetera. We can look at things like bringing up all the public schools in an area and finding out, you know, I want to look at all schools where the percent of the student population that's eligible for free or reduced lunch is greater than 75% of the population. So you can do a lot of sophisticated queries with this. And the final part is the ability to upload or hyperlink to other content to frame that issue. In this case, food security is the issue. Well, hyperlinking to YouTube videos around healthy eating, active living, uploading executive summary reports or the literature that we're learning around children's mental health issues that can help contextualize this in a more meaningful way. So the notebooks help us frame and manage all these issues. We can also disseminate this information as our groups in the three communities are building these issue notebooks. Well, how do we push that out and make that publicly available to the communities? So we have different dissemination mechanisms, emailing the issue or individual content, security, I don't have much time. So what we're building with this is a national peer learning network, and mental health is a part of it, United Way is working with it, community action agencies, public health departments, and we're all putting our hands around the huge elephant of what we're dealing in the public sector. So I'm going to stop there. Again, if you want to afterwards learn more in terms of a live demonstration, I'll be able to do that.
So just to talk a little bit about what those communities are doing, they're asked, they have dollars that they can access for technical assistance. It's not really for the creation of any type of program, but it's for the technical assistance to not only understand their community's needs, to learn the public health model and approach, and to work with Chris on the community issues management. So each community has to pick two projects that they will do, and these follow one after the other. We have found that in their first project, they really kind of have struggled. They have tended to want to go back to their old way of doing things, even though we have had policy academies basically on the public health model and what that means under surveillance, policy development, and monitoring. One of the communities opted, they had a program that was in another school district in their county that really had issues with kids that were transitioning from middle school to high school. And we do know that this is a high risk time for this population. And so they had implemented a model or a program there. Well, they thought in this project that they wanted to just take that model and put it into another community, which is what they did. Unfortunately, it wasn't as well received by the school. So rather than being a universal approach, which it was in the first community, it is kind of a set aside and a voluntary program that occurs after school rather than part of the school curriculum that was available to everyone. So we had to work with them to understand that what the difference was and kind of the mistake that they made, and it's all a learning process for them. They've also learned that perhaps they don't have the right partners at the table, which is always a mistake we make in many ways. But again, like I mentioned, oftentimes they think it's around prevention and promotion. And of course, the public health model, that's where we want to get to. But it's really the process by which we can get there. So often, when I've presented this in the, on the mental health side at conferences or conventions, we've talked about that you can't just take an evidence-based practice, even a prevention evidence-based practice, such as bullying. That's a very popular area. But if your school's major issue or your community's major issue is not bullying, but lead exposure, then implementing a bullying program will not have the impact that you would hope to meet your community's needs. So we always say that it's not just evidence-based practices in a box, that you can't look at it that way. You have to look at what your community's specific needs are and then look at the approach that you can take. So with their second projects, they're starting to learn this more and more. They're just beginning to develop their second projects, and we're hopeful that we will see this evolution in how to apply the public health model to children's mental health. So thank you very much for your time. Appreciate that mental health could come in and talk with public health. Thanks.